This is a Rain Pop-Up Podcast. This is Brad Hill, and I'm talking with Eric Dean, CEO of Stitcher, the podcast content and distribution company, and the parent of Midroll Media, Stitcher's B2B advertising sales division. Eric, hello, and thanks for talking today.
Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Doing great. You know, when you first contacted me and suggested we have a conversation, it was right after Joe Rogan and Spotify rattled the podsphere. And so I certainly want to get into that. But coincidentally, today also, your company has released a 10-year podcast report. And I would love to talk about that too, if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Where'd you like to start?
Let's start with the report. It's so meaty. And we'll get to Joe Rogan a bit after that, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. The report came out today, and I haven't had a chance to scour through it completely, but I did get the press release, and I have some of the important bullet points. All very interesting. Let's just give our listeners an idea of what this is. This is a survey of Stitcher's audience usage, Stitcher being one of the most important podcast distribution nodes in the world. Have I got that right?
Close. It's not a survey. It's actual data. So it's really an analysis of real consumption data taken from our app, the Stitcher app, which I will let you say it's one of the most important. I would just say it's one of the oldest and certainly one of the strongest pure play podcasting apps in the podcast ecosystem.
Right. So you've got at least 10 years of fascinating data, and it seems like your team has poured through it and delivered some metrics and trends. In your mind, can you give me one or two or three or however many you want of the most important findings?
Yeah, sure. So the motivation behind this, to your point, it's 10 years worth of data. Stitcher started, really, its first incarnation was 2007, but it's been around for a decade. And a lot has happened in podcasting in a decade, as you and I both know. And it's almost accelerating in a way with the events of the past couple of years. But the world has changed. The podcasting universe has changed. The types of content that people listen to, we all assume, have changed. We think usage patterns have changed as the universe of listeners has grown, but a lot of the discussion about how podcasting has evolved is either anecdotal or based on relatively limited sample sizes. And what we notice is that a lot of podcast platforms either didn't have the scale to deliver meaningful analyses of the playback data that they are privy to within their own apps, or they just don't care to make that available in a really broad way. So Apple doesn't publish a great deal of insights into what's going on in the Apple Podcast app. Spotify, I think, does snapshots here and there, but by and large, I think keeps a lot of data relatively guarded. And a number of other apps just aren't big enough to give a really good sense of what's going on or haven't been around for long enough. Even Spotify, which again can be generous with its data sometimes, just has not been observing the podcast universe for as long as we have. So in part as a way to showcase what's happened in the world of podcasting, and also just to reward everybody who's all the creators who have worked with us over the years and all the people who turned to us for support and services, we thought it would be great to open up and provide some real transparent insight into what we see within the app without necessarily violating any specific user or show's data. Mm-hmm. We were certainly in a position to provide some interesting aggregate insights into what's happening in the world of podcasting.
Does it veer into projections of the future at all?
No, we're not going to get there. One caveat is that we actually started working on this project. We conceived of it at the end of last year and started working on it early this year. And we're pretty close to finalizing it when the COVID-19 crisis hit. Mm-hmm. And of course, we observed significant shifts in listening behavior in the weeks right around the first stay-at-home orders in the U.S. And so we paused putting it out there and said, well, let's watch what happens. And rather than folding that into the overall report, we're essentially releasing two separate reports. One is the broad study, and the other is our COVID-19 update to that study. And they're both just kind of hitting online at the same time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's get into some of the particular points that are in the report and in the press distribution of the report. First of them, the growth of podcasts not slowing down. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I don't think this is news to anyone, but just the sheer volume of content that is available in podcast form continues to grow at a quite rapid pace. I think we saw something like 60% compound annual growth in just the number of episodes produced every year for the past 5 years or so. And we're in a world where not only do we have an increasingly growing long tail of I don't want to use the word amateurs, but we'll call it a prosumer, consumer, user-generated shows out there in the world, thanks to folks like Anchor, who are making it incredibly easy, and other podcast hosting companies that are making it easy for people to jump on board, but also growth at the other end of the spectrum in the professional, I'll call it the professional podcast world, where creators, well-known creators are coming into the space, whether they're stars or producers or writers or directors, where podcasters are launching whole networks like My Favorite Murder did with Exactly Right, the network they launched with us. So there's been this growth, this proliferation in shows, and it just keeps growing as more and more interests emerge within the podcast landscape, as we find audiences that are not served by whatever the current selection of content is. New shows pop up to serve those audiences, and that audience starts to come to podcasting.
I'm fascinated by that 60% compound annual growth rate. Very impressive, obviously. And it makes me wish that podcasting were somehow an investable entity.
Well, let's be clear. That's the number of episodes. That's not the total listening, right? So that's the supply. Mm-hmm. The demand, as we all know, has increased over the years. I mean, we've certainly seen the Edison data. We all watch the Edison data quite quite closely every year when it comes out. So when I'm talking about that growth in the number of episodes, that's just sheerly the number of podcasts that are published, that are available. In 2019, almost 7 million podcast episodes were published to Stitcher. Some of those probably had one listener or no listeners, but... again, I think the explosion in content also comes alongside an explosion in the number of audiences, the number of interests that are served. And so within every one of those audiences, there's hits and there's spikes. And there's, of course, been ongoing growth in listenership that we all know about.
Mm-hmm. One point that's caught my eye, because podcasting has traditionally and is still thought of as a downloadable medium. It is downloadable, but sometimes thought of exclusively as a download medium, that streaming remains popular, and two-thirds of podcasts are streamed rather than downloaded. And I understand that on the back end, there's some technical fudging between whatever differentiation there might be between a stream and a download. But to me, this does indicate what I've always thought would happen and have been told is happening, which is that people like to hit that play button and just hear the episode. And that's different. It seems like a different psychological behavior than downloading a piece of content.
Right. I mean, I guess I would not say there's fudging on the back end. It's two distinct behaviors, because again, we're tracking in our data the actual event. What did the user do? If you are running a podcast hosting company and you're trying to glean whether or not people are downloading or streaming, yes, there you have to rely on trying to figure out whether or not the actual request for the file was different in some way. But we can see the actual action taken by the user. Are they pressing play, or are they pressing download and then pressing play and listening to an already downloaded file? And the reason that's important is it does represent two distinct types of listening. The one is immediate streaming. I'm going to listen to this thing right now. Mm-hmm. And the other is I want to put this on my device and possibly listen later. And there's always been a question, I think, or there's been a long-standing question of, we all know people download podcasts. Are they actually listening? I think our data generally show, whenever we look at it, however we slice it, that yes, people are downloading, but they are also listening. You typically do not download massive amounts of content that you don't plan on listening to later. Eventually, you stop downloading that content.
Mm-hmm. Contrary to the tremendous popularity of the Joe Rogan Experience, which typically drops three-hour podcasts, I see here you say that episodes are trending shorter.
Yes. Yes. Joe Rogan is an outlier in a lot of ways. I think his show is also about a decade old at this point.
Yeah.
many of the kind of biggest and longest running shows in podcasting, whether it's Bill Simmons, obviously that podcast changed names and providers at one point, but it's still basically the same show. Mm-hmm. WTF, Comedy Bang Bang, a lot of shows kind of started right around the same time. And there, I think in the early days that nobody thought a lot about length necessarily. There was a lot of experimentation. People created shows that worked for whatever type of content they were trying to do. There was certainly a batch of people who came over from radio who had experience being on the air for many hours and essentially trying to fill airtime.
All right.
I think setting aside Rogan, where I think the format is born less out of habit and more out of his style, there were a lot of podcasts in the early days that emulated radio formats and tried to fill up multiple hours of content. Or there were podcasts produced by people with no experience at all who just pressed record and never edited. Mm-hmm. So the average length of a show in the early days tended to be longer. There was less editing. There were more people trying to emulate radio airtime. There were just chunks of radio talk shows dumped into podcasting form. People weren't necessarily creating for the medium. What I think we've seen as a creative organization is there's much more attention paid now to how much time consumers have to actually finish shows. There are people paying more attention to the cadence of episode release and the chapterization, if you will, of podcasts. So we're going to tell this limited run story in an arc of eight episodes. Some of it's driven in part by making sure there's enough room to keep a decent ad load on the show. And as a result, you start to see shows that gravitate towards what I would call kind of an ideal commute length, somewhere between 30 and 50 minutes. And with more editing and more straight to podcasting kind of original creations that are thinking about how people are consuming them and how people listen, the average length has come down a bit.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about demographics. I forget what they're all called, but I'm seeing here that the 18 to 34 age group has some interesting differences from the 35 to 55 age group.
Yeah, and the demographic information here, we did have to do some extrapolation. We got pretty detailed data about demographics from the shows that we distribute and sell ads against via the mid-roll business and our own and operated content businesses. We get less of that data through Stitcher. We just don't collect that type of data, but we can marry the two. We know, for example, if a show that we represent fits into a particular cluster or genre, then the demographics probably look relatively similar across that genre.
Mm-hmm.
The podcasting, remember, used to be a slightly older skewing medium. And I think that's changed over the past 5 years significantly. And now it's much more balanced. And now there's a much larger cohort of 18 to 34-year-olds listening to podcasts. And we've seen that group probably grow faster than any of the others.
Mm.
But I do think that habitually people in that older age group either have the time or the patience or the commuting hours or whatever it is, they do tend to have the ability to listen to more hours of shows.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring up COVID-19. You know, here at RAIN, we receive so much information and measurement about COVID-19 that our heads are spinning a bit. But the gist I get is there was a slump, there was a rebound, and a lot of interesting jagged spikes up and down among the categories.
Yes.
What's Stitcher's take about this?
Yeah, that's pretty consistent. Again, we have the advantage of seeing actual user behaviors as opposed to relying on hosts, or rather server-side download stats. There was probably a bit of a delay on the download side. People were likely still, this is getting back to the download versus stream, people were likely still downloading the usual shows that they downloaded on a weekly basis, but they lost the time to listen to all of them. Mm-hmm. So I think we saw that show up a little bit later. Immediately within Stitcher, we saw the number of users didn't drop that much. It only dropped about 4 or 5%. So the number of active users was still pretty high, but the total number of hours that they could consume dropped by about 14-15%. And that makes sense. People are not commuting. And in fact, I think we published that interesting little overlay of the hour by hour, day by day, and you can just see that commute time disappear off the map and get replaced by a peak later in the day. It's like people woke up and got started listening later, but people are still listening. And I think to us, in the very early weeks of this entire crisis, while we were trying to figure out what was ahead for the business and the industry, seeing that people were still finding time to listen to at least their most favorite shows, even in the middle of quarantine and in the middle of self-isolation, told us that this wasn't drive time radio that people were just going to not have anymore. This is a choice medium. This is an on-demand medium, and people listen to these shows on purpose, intentionally. They're a big part of their lives. And so, sure, maybe they couldn't listen in the car anymore, but it turns out the car was just the time that they had available to listen to the show. So they still listen to the show, but they find a different time. Maybe that's in the middle of the bathroom, in the middle of the night, kind of hiding from their whoever else. But people are finding the time. And now, we are starting to see.
Don't tell me that bathroom listening is part of your analytics.
We do not have that much detail. I think only Amazon knows that. But we are starting to see a slight return to normal patterns in the past couple of weeks as more and more people pick up with patterns of life that look a little bit more like they used to, if not dramatically more.
Well, this is a fortuitous finding, because I think when you disrupt a routine, you disrupt everything within the routine too.
Absolutely.
So, you could have just as easily found if podcasting weren't as sticky as it is, you could have found that it really fell off a cliff with the lack of commuting.
For the most part, not entirely, but podcasting tends to be a solitary activity, something you listen to in your headphones or in your car going to sleep. There are certainly people who listen on smart devices, and I don't think it's in this report, but we saw a noticeable increase, a really significant increase in listening on Sonos throughout this period.
Oh, that is interesting.
It was marked. And so I think more people are taking advantage of their lovely Sonos speaker systems in the crisis. But to your point, it's their behavior changes, but they find a new way. And the fact that they did tells me that, okay, this is a medium that's here to stay. This is an important part of people's lives. Mm-hmm. If they are finding time amidst everything else, whether it's on a walk or on their Peloton or wherever, to consume, my wife, for example, has been doing a lot of the grocery runs. I've been doing other runs, but that is when she listens to podcasts now. Like, it's like, okay, I'm actually going to a store slightly farther away because it's a better store, but that's the 35 minutes that I have to listen.
Mm-hmm. I get it that crime is king. That's not unexpected.
Crime was king. It took a real drop in the beginning phases of the crisis.
Yes.
Not surprisingly. And we saw a big jump in news and politics in some cases. We saw a very significant jump in science and healthcare. But true crime, and in some cases, kind of all over the map. Some of these trends, sports obviously took a big drop, but other than sports, the other big thing to drop is true crime. Mm-hmm. I think in March, in the weeks immediately following the start of all this, nobody had the stomach for stories of murder. That's changed recently. It's come back. I guess murder is more popular again, but it has come back. It's a bit of a rebound, but yeah, if you look at the original report, I think historically true crime remains just a hugely popular genre.
And I saw on this bullet point that comedy podcasts have resurged somewhat, or in 2019, comedy podcasts were huge. And, whenever I see that, it makes me feel like I've got a bone to pick with Apple, because there are some shows, some of the really popular category swinging shows like Rogan and Marc Maron, that are categorized as comedy podcasts, even though they're really not funny. They don't intend to be funny. They're long form conversational shows. And I wish they had their own category. What do you think?
Yeah, we use genre labels like Apple does for consistency. But internally, when we look at shows, we actually have a very different way of classifying them. And that's based on the similarity of listening patterns between shows. So if there's a group of shows that tend to have a common set of listeners, or you tend to see listeners from one show like another show quickly and pick it up, then we start to cluster those shows together. And then we start to look for similarities between the shows, and then we label them after that.
Uh-huh.
And The shows that are listed in our comedy genre, for example, we don't think of as comedy either.
Right.
In fact, a very specific cluster of celebrity-driven talk / film / Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, those all fit together, but they're not comedy bang bang, which is a totally different world.
That's right, yeah. It's like neighborhoods that you're developing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we're sticking to the genre data that Apple uses, again, because that's how people are self-categorizing their shows.
Yes.
But when we look at what's really going on there, yeah, Rogan and Conan and Dax and Marin and How Did This Get Made, they live in their own cluster, their own little neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And there's a funny element. There's definitely a comedy element, but there's something else there.
Yeah. All right. I don't think we can go through this whole report bullet by bullet, but those are some of the standout things that caught my eye when I first got it, which was just before we got on the phone. Anything else you want to say about the report or any interesting things you want to pull out of it?
I think for us, two important findings. One is the binging, just looking at the evolution of binge listening and its important, or rather its importance. And we've seen more shows publish as serialized documentaries or serialized stories, starting, of course, with Serial, but others before and, of course, after that. Just as we've seen that same behavior in video, validating that it is absolutely a behavior within podcasting helps us understand how to structure shows and how to develop a multi-episode arc, and being able to confirm that that really is a real behavior that producers should pay attention to, I think was good to see. Second is understanding how people discover, and that new listeners graze and browse a lot more than people who are set in their ways, tells us that in order to help with discovery and help people find new shows, and frankly help shows find audiences, we have to start to understand how those groups behave differently and serve them differently, and have one discovery mechanism for people who are new to podcasting and super excited and want to find whatever they can find, and also have a different mechanism for people who listen to the same five shows, but maybe one day suddenly decide, I really need a break. And understanding how to get in there right at that moment, I think, is key.
Yeah. All right, cool. Listen, let's talk about Joe Rogan. And I don't want to guide this at the beginning. Eric, just give me your most deeply held opinion about his deal with Spotify.
I'm glad that Joe's getting rewarded for the community and for the listenership that he's built over many years. Those of us in podcasting have known for a long time, probably before people in the outside world, what a significant cultural force Joe Rogan had become over the past few years. And there's all these think pieces now talking about, hey, Rogan, here's this crazy thing you never heard about. Well, we've known about him for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think his style and his show are really perfect examples of how podcasting can be enormously effective in creating an intimate, no-holds-barred, deep interview. Just the sheer variation in guests and subject matter that he wanders down, just kind of the organic knowledge discovery process that he goes through, has always been, I think, one of the great examples of what podcasting does well. So it's, on one hand, it's great to see that rewarded. It's great to see a well-capitalized, multinational, digital audio platform recognize that and reward him. On the other hand, is it an equitable transaction? I'm not sure. I'm not sure, actually, that they're paying him enough.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, too.
I think a lot of people said, oh, they're wildly overpaying. I strongly disagree. I don't know exactly how much they paid. I read the same articles that you do. But my hunch is, even if you just compare the market cap that they got the day of that announcement, the boost to market cap that they got, versus what they're paying them out over a couple of years, and that's money, by the way, that's presumably backstopped by ad revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to think Spotify actually got the better deal in all this. And I think it brings a, as you see from our report, a somewhat different audience in some cases, certainly than they got with Gimlet and maybe even The Ringer. And it will certainly accelerate the platform. Rogan's fans are big fans. And of course, there's going to be some percentage who say, I hate Spotify, I'm never going to go to that platform, blah, 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 blah. I think most of them are like, all right, I'm just going to press this button over here and listen to him as opposed to this button, and I'm still going to listen for 3 hours. So what's the matter? Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I think it's a shame that that his reach will be muted to some degree, that he's not going to be as broadly accessible as he was when he was distributed throughout the ecosystem and on YouTube. And while it's not the same as putting everything behind a paywall, I think it does probably inhibit growth to some degree. But maybe they're also banking on Spotify growth to grow him. So I think it's a shame to see him walled off. But I congratulate him on his success, and I think it was a smart and savvy move by Spotify.
Yeah, I do too. Do you have any inside info that you can share about how advertising revenue will be divided, or whether Spotify will apply its own programmatic structure to the show?
Unfortunately, I do not. I think, like I said, I read the same articles you do, and we know that PMM is still involved in selling the show.
Right.
And they've obviously done a great job selling the host red spots. Presumably, Spotify feels like that's an area where having a partner makes sense. It's pure speculation. I have to imagine that they're also, Spotify's banking on being able to use that inventory for their own more systemic ad sales efforts down the road.
Eric, it was great talking to you today.
Great speaking with you. And please peruse the report. There are all sorts of interesting things, and we will be updating that from time to time as we see more interesting things in the world.
Okay. Well, good. Until our next conversation then, Eric, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Brad.